The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All the way from Providence, Rhode Island, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Everybody, my name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and as all of you know, I love me some good story rhyming. And this chapter, this chapter just hits all the right spots and the cockles of my heart. I was in on this chapter.
Okay.
100%.
I'm glad to hear that.
Especially when it came to the Ron and Harry relationship, how that has come about, and what the author uses. She uses a very specific trick to solidify and finally calcify the resolution of this relationship. I'm very excited to talk about that and some other stuff that goes on in this chapter as well. Chapter 21, man, I am in. I'm sorry, chapter 20. I am in. I like this a lot.
Awesome. Me too. All right. So we're here, of course, as you said, chapter 20, the first task. This was just another Quidditch match. That was all. Just another Quidditch match. And that Horntail was just another ugly opposing team. He looked down at the clutch of eggs and spotted the gold one gleaming against its cement-colored fellows, residing safely between the dragon's front legs. Okay, Harry told himself, diversionary tactics. Let's go. He dived. The Horntail's head followed him. He knew what it was going to do and pulled out of the dive just in time. A jet of fire had been released exactly where he would have been had he not swerved away. But Harry didn't care. That was no more than dodging a bludger. Great Scott! He can fly! Yelled Bagman as the crowd shrieked and gasped. Are you watching this, Crumb? Mr. Crumb, technically.
Mary, what are your... I mean, before we get into the rest of this chapter, did you like how they handled the first task and the avoiding of the dragon in the film better, or did you like it in the book better?
Don't think I understand what you mean.
Well, the way that this book writes the sequence, it's a lot of twists and turns, ups and downs, and
yes.
You get an emotional response from Harry. It's like this is just Quidditch, that's just a bludger. Like this is, I'm in my happy space now. But the way that the film handled it was there was some emotional stuff going on, but it was certainly more the action of it was a lot more palpable. In my opinion, especially when the dragon's climbing on Hogwarts and everything.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, which did you like better, the way that it was handled in the book or the way that they kind of invented it for the film?
I'd say the film.
I kind of agree.
And I'll tell you why. I think, we've been wrapped up in this magical world now. We're here in the fourth book, and this was still really great. It really was great.
Yes.
When I read it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is great, because you could picture you've been with Harry throughout all of his Quidditch games, throughout all of his Quidditch trials and learning about this. So you're there with him in your imagination in the book. I think that had they written the movie the way that it was written in the book, it wouldn't have had the same impact. We needed to be really scared.
Yes.
I think in the book it's more exciting and you're happy for him. You feel him have that huge sigh of relief that this is just like another Quidditch game. Look at me. This was just like, missing a bludger. We spend a lot more time in Quidditch in the books than we do in the movies. Mm-hmm. In the movies you have your obligatory like, yay, it's Quidditch time.
Whee, Quidditch.
Here's the one Quidditch game,
Yes.
But in the books we really get to be a part of Harry and we get to be in the fact he's going to practice and he's leading drills and doing all this stuff. So in the movie too, the fact that we get more visual bits of Hogwarts and stuff, it's something they can do that they can't necessarily do as easily in the book. So I think to each was very good.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, let's get into the rest of the show, shall
okay,
we? Yeah,
yes.
I just wanted to remind you guys that you can follow Mary and I on all the different socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, whatever it is. You can just search Mary and Blake. And of course, if you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, you can absolutely do so on any podcatcher of your choice. And obviously, if you want to get some more special exclusive content from Mary and myself, go to jointhenerdclan.com, become an official member of the Nerd Clan, where you'll get our world famous knee-jerk reactions, including right now, I'm going to be doing knee-jerk reactions to Succession.
Okay.
So I'm very excited about that. That's just recently come back out for season 3. And of course, as you know, Mary, Succession is very personal and deep to my heart, as it basically is my life in real life.
Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting experiment,
okay.
We'll say.
Well, here's something that I'm going to ask of those of you listening right now. If you have not yet logged into Apple Podcasts and left us a written review, even if you listen on Spotify or on Facebook or YouTube, head on over, because Apple Podcasts is the best way for people to find our podcast, and leave us a written review. Not just leaving the stars, just write a couple of sentences. It's like a little warm little hug that you can give Blake and I over the interwebs. And I want to thank MET. She said, "I love all of Mary and Blake's podcasts. After my parents introduced me to OutlanderCast," which, how cool is that, that her parents did. High five to your parents, Emmy. I've listened to many more of their podcasts, including the Potterverse. I listen to them all throughout my workday, and it makes my days 1,000 times better. I love listening to their analysis, opinions, Mary's overall Potter passion, and Blake's hilarious laugh. Thank you for making great content. So thank you, Emmy, and thank you, everyone who has written a review so far. You make our day so much brighter. So on that note, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
If you're listening to this in real time in October of 2021, we want to thank you for your patience, as we have had a little bit of a delay in the production of our podcasts. I had surgery a couple weeks ago, and I'm just saying this particularly because it is the month of October. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I actually found a lump on my chest. I have breast cancer that runs in my family, and particularly in young women. My mom had it when she was a year older than I, so we took everything very seriously, had surgery. I've never had surgery like this before, so it really took me by surprise. That being said, I do not have cancer. The lump was totally cancer-free. Glad it's out of me, because it was the size of a golf ball. See you later. But I want to just thank you, because it has actually been harder for me. I did not get to go to Madame Pomfrey and just drink a little pumpkin juice and bippity-boppity-boo, feel better the next day. I'm still feeling a little rough. So I appreciate for all of you who have had patience. And if you're listening to this in the future, you know nothing, Jon Snow. So
just,
it's totally okay.
Just go with the flow.
There you go. So in this chapter, Harry and Hermione work together to try to figure out how Harry can get past his dragon. Lots of things that they're trying to figure on out. Of course, Harry warns Cedric to let him know that the task is a dragon, which is very puff of Harry.
Very puff.
Very, very puff. Fairness is something I hold dear, and I've often thought, oh, is this a Gryffindor trait? No, it's a puff trait, and that's why I'm a Griffin puff. Faux Moody overhears this, tells Harry, hey, I've got a little trick for you. What are you good at? Flying. How can you get your broom? A simple smile. Awesome sauce. So, and in this, he does just that, gets the golden egg, and at the end, they are told, guess what? This golden egg will tell you what the second task is.
Yeah, this chapter,
It's a lot.
It is a lot.
And it's only over a couple of days. It's not, you know, we've had previous chapters where it's like it spans a month. This is in just a couple of days where Harry figures things out.
Yep.
And Cedric, you know?
Right, absolutely. And not only do we have the plot of it all, let's figure out how to do these particular spells, let's do this charm, how are we getting past the whole Karkaroff and Madame Maxime thing, but we also have some great emotional resolution for Harry between he and Ron, and what is absolutely necessary for Harry to really compete to the level that he should be going forward for the rest of the book.
Yeah.
And that might be my favorite part of this chapter. But then again, though, I think my actual favorite part is the push and the pull that Harry has with Hogwarts and their wizarding community in general, and what his relationship is and what that means to himself and how he shares that with the wizarding community. Mm-hmm. You know, there's this great moment when Harry is thinking, oh man, I don't want to be here. But I'd rather be here than back at the Dursleys.
Privet Drive, right?
Yeah.
I'd rather be facing a dragon than be back with my uncle, aunt, and cousin.
Right. And that says a lot, right? I mean, that says a whole lot. But the fact that Harry is so, how do I want to say it? Othered right now?
Ostracized?
Yeah. I mean, obviously we have the whole Potter Stinks thing, and Harry's exceptionalism, something that we have absolutely mm-hmm. talked about in this podcast for many chapters now.
It's just the loneliness of it still.
Right.
We are with Harry all the time. Harry's our best friend in the books, you know,
yes.
as a character. We are with him all the time.
And I think that's what makes this chapter work so well, because it starts off with Harry thinking, oh, God, I am terrified. What am I going to do? He's snapping at Hermione. Mm-hmm. You know, Hermione, just let me think. You know, let me concentrate, as she's trying to figure out and try to help him. But there's no way that she can understand. There's no way that she can appreciate what he's going through.
Yep.
Mainly because he's Harry. Because, I'm sorry, he is.
I'm Harry freaking Potter!
But also because he's been chosen unwillingly. He did not volunteer for this, but yet he is still here. Yeah. He has to face a dragon. And nobody gets it other than just him and his fellow competitors. And finally, when you get some recognition of that, and then you finally get a resolution with Ron and how that all comes about at the end of the chapter, man, that emotional through line is perfect in this chapter.
It's funny. Blake and I obviously are parents. We have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and we were the first of our friends to have kids, and it was very lonely. It was very hard.
Yes.
And you kind of felt like, wow, I have to live my normal life and raise humans. This is crazy. And like, friends never really understood like why we couldn't live our normal life. And even just this weekend, my dad had said, oh, Mary's changed a lot since she was a parent. And I must say, yeah, no kidding. No kidding, Dad. Like, of course I've changed. Everyone
obviously
changes.
Yeah.
But we have a good friend of ours who they just had their first child, a week ago and a week and a half ago. And I went over to visit them. I brought over my world famous chicken pot pie.
Hi-oh.
I can make 3 meals really well. Chicken pot pie is one of them. And as she's holding her child, she said, you know, I never really got it until now. This is really hard. You know, in a good way. I don't want to scare anybody from having kids, but you know, she's like, I never got it until now. And when I reread for the billionth time, of course, you know, that line by Ron, you know, when Ron finally kind of sees the light, everybody sees the danger that Harry was in. And it's like, wow, I get it, man.
Yeah. Holy smokes.
That's essentially the look on my friend's face, you know, like, wow, that's really intense. So, but like you said, you know, I think it's really important for us to point this out about Harry's, and it doesn't feel like loneliness. You don't sit there with Harry with him being mopey. He just knows he's different and knows he's determined and knows he has to face this. I do enjoy the time in the library. You know, when you think about Harry doesn't necessarily care about being the star pupil. You know, he does take his studies seriously.
Yeah.
But the last time that we spent this much time in the library was when they were trying to figure out who Nicholas Flamel was.
Right.
You know, so it's always like not necessarily classroom related. It's like this extracurricular stuff that he needs to figure out with Hermione. And there they are just poring over these books. And, you know, that it makes you feel bad because the conjunctivitis curse is probably on the next page of these books that are humorous because they're probably books that actually the last time they were taken out was probably by Hagrid when he had Norbert.
And he's the only person that probably would for a very long. He did all the dust off.
Oh, yes. Yes. Book earmarked a couple of the pictures, the posts and stuff.
I love how Harry does what Harry does, which is he starts freaking out about everything. And Hermione's like, yeah, Harry, get it. But if we don't figure out the thing with the dragon, you're going to die.
Yes.
So why don't we figure out the dragon first, and then we can worry about Karkaroff and Sirius and all the other crap that's happening.
Right.
And that's
Let's
very,
just try
that's
and
very
keep
Hermione.
Alive until Tuesday evening, she
right.
said.
It's very Hermione in the way that she goes about it with the switching spell and like and how she's breaking it down in her own. It's like a train of thought. You know, it's you could do this, but why would you do that? Because, you know, if you switched it, it really wouldn't switch at all. Like, you can do transfiguration, but why would you transfigure it? Like, I'm not sure if you could do that. You definitely don't have mm-hmm. enough power to do that. But, mm-hmm. And then Harry, again, does what Harry does. Hermione.
Yeah.
What are you doing? Let me concentrate. But even though he's saying let me concentrate, there's nothing going on at all. It's just this fuzz. It's this fizz in his brain that he doesn't seem to have a hold of. Mm-hmm. And again, the way that the author writes this chapter is just so beautiful on so many different levels. And Mary, I think I would kind of argue with you a little bit.
Argue
against you a little bit in Harry feeling alone.
I'm not in the mood for arguing. I'm weak.
I'm still recovering.
I'm sitting here drinking my licorice tea.
All I smell right now is just this overwhelming like cinnamon.
It's called licorice, Egyptian licorice.
Oh my God, it's gross. It's just wafting through the studio.
You're pretty much in Trelawney's tower.
Yeah, seriously. Like Harry, I would love to skip this portion, but I can't. So we got to do it. But there's this one part that the author writes, and I'm going to skip ahead a little bit here, where she writes, Harry glanced around. Cedric had nodded once to show that he understood Bagman's words, and then started pacing around the tent again. He looked slightly green. Flora Delacour and Crum hadn't reacted at all, and perhaps they thought they might be sick if they opened their mouths. That was certainly how Harry felt. But they, at least, had volunteered for this. And in no time at all, hundreds upon hundreds of pairs of feet could be heard passing the tent, their owners talking excitedly, laughing and joking. Harry felt as separate from the crowd as if they were a different species. And then, it felt about a second later to Harry, Bagman was opening the neck of the purple silk sack, ladies first, opening it, offering it to Fleur Delacour. I love how this is written. Just everybody else in this whole wizarding community is so foreign to Harry at this moment that he considers them a different species.
Mm.
And that's why, Mary, I kind of...
Maybe he is a little lonely.
He is lonely. However, a big however, okay? Because, you know, I'm, you know...
Your cousin from Boston.
All right. Big however. There's also a moment when Harry walks into the tent and he has this nod, like this nod of appreciation from Cedric, where there's almost this sort of camaraderie mm-hmm. that maybe Harry is not 100% alone, that Cedric is probably the only person who gets it.
And then he's going to die.
Yep, you know.
Like they could have been besties. Maybe not besties, but you know what it would have been like? The bromance and Stranger Things with the older kid and the younger kid. Steve and...
Oh, yeah. Okay, I gotcha.
That's what it would have been like. Harry and Cedric, but Steve and that kid. What's that kid's name?
I got it. You know.
Cute as a button. I love that kid. I loved that bromance. But that's what I kind of felt like. Like, you go through some really traumatic, scary stuff together, and you just get it. And you've got different friends groups. You're a couple of years apart.
Oh,
it's okay.
Dustin.
Steve and Dustin. Like, that's what I wanted for Cedric and Harry. You know, not part of the Weasley family. Not even part of the house. Like, we can have our own things. But we've got each other's backs.
Yes.
And it's exciting to see that continue on in this book, those little nods until he's dead. Think about that. Think about Harry's loneliness, how few people he connects with.
Yes.
He connects now with Cedric.
Mm-hmm.
Cedric dies. He connects with Sirius. Sirius is going to die.
Yeah. And that probably only reinforces the relationships that he shares with Harry, I'm sorry, with Ron and Hermione.
I mean, it's no wonder he marries Ginny because honestly, at this point,
she's the only one left.
Or he just doesn't want to invest his heart too much in people, you know?
Yeah, and how could he, right? Considering
just got, like, super dark,
right? Considering, you know, what we know from the series, and again, as you all know, this is a spoiler Harry Potter podcast.
Just said Cedric dies and Harry marries Ginny. It doesn't get much more spoilery than that.
But
right
Harry
now.
Eventually figures out that he is just in fact a lamb that's been led to slaughter by Dumbledore, and he had to die. And imagine figuring that out, and knowing that whoever you attach yourself to has the risk of either dying because you're Harry freaking Potter, or running the risk of getting the business from these really bad big time wizards that want to avenge Voldemort or take out Harry Potter for the sake of taking out Harry Potter. Like, you can't.
This is why I'm down for Ginny, book Ginny. I really am down for her. She's got her own baggage. She was possessed by Voldemort. Once again, has something in common with Harry that very few, nobody else has in common. And she knew him before he went through a ton of stuff. Granted, his parents were murdered when he was a baby, and he pretty much, killed Voldemort as a baby. But, I mean, in his younger years, she gets to know him before things get really heavy. So I'm happy that they end up together. I'm here for it.
I think the action portion of this sequence in the film is better, but the pathos behind the book is so much better. I did not get the sense of isolation for Harry in the film the way that I do the book.
Agreed.
Once again, the author is exquisite in her writing here, that she puts, Harry felt oddly separate from everyone around him, whether they were wishing him good luck or hissing, "We'll have a box of tissues ready, Potter," as he passed. It was a state of nervousness so advanced that he wondered whether he mightn't just lose his head when they tried to lead him out to his dragon and start trying to curse everyone in sight. Time was behaving in a more peculiar fashion than ever.
Yeah.
Rushing past in great dollops, so that one moment he seemed to be sitting down in this first lesson, history of magic, and the next, walking into lunch, and then, where had the morning gone? The last dragon-free hours? Professor McGonagall was hurrying him over to the Great Hall. Lots of people were watching. Potter, the champions have to come into the grounds now. You have to get ready for your first task. Okay, said Harry, standing up, his fork falling onto his plate with a clatter. Good luck, Harry, Hermione whispered. You'll be fine. Yeah, said Harry in a voice that was most unlike his own.
Mm.
Oh, and then even the fact that Professor McGonagall doesn't even seem like herself during this time. And she's saying, don't panic. Just stay calm. Everything's going to be fine. You just do your best and nobody will think any worse of you. Are you okay?
I love her. She feels so badly that he's doing this. She does not understand why this poor little cherub needs to be put through this. Why Albus Dumbledore, who's the best wizard of his age,
they got to figure a way out of here.
What are we doing, Albus?
Yeah.
And he won't tell her. She knows nothing. She doesn't know about the Snape stuff. She's been with Harry since he was a wee little babe.
I know. So I just the emotional through
just
lines.
Do your best.
The emotional through lines here are just spectacular.
Agreed.
And I feel like I keep saying this over and over again, which is you don't get the sense of isolation. You didn't get
in the movie.
In the movie.
Okay.
You didn't get it in the movie with the whole Sirius thing and how alone Harry felt, and you don't get it here. But it is what it is. We've jumped around here.
Let's go hang out with Fo Moody. Because obviously Harry tells Cedric, it's all good, nice, keep that fairness. That's the puff side of Cedric leaning into Harry, you know? Be fair. So in comes Harry into Moody's office. And Moody, obviously is going to tell him, we're going to want a simple spell. What are you really good at? Flying, bada bing, bada boom. But while they're there, we get to see a lot of cool stuff. They talk about the different things that were inside this room, the Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher's room, when it was Lockhart or Lupin, for example.
Right.
And he has all these different things. On his desk stood what looked like a large cracked glass spinning top. Harry recognized it at once as a sneakoscope because he owned one himself, though it was much smaller than Moody's. In the corner on a small table stood an object that looked something like an extra squiggly golden television aerial. It was humming slightly. What appeared to be a mirror hung opposite Harry on the wall, but it was not reflecting the room. Shadowy figures were moving around inside of it, none of them clearly in focus. "Like my dark detectors, do you?" said Moody, who was watching Harry closely. And Harry points something out. "That secrecy sensor vibrates when it detects concealment and lies. No use here, of course. Too much interference. Students in every direction lying about why they hadn't done their homework. Been humming ever since I got here." Hmm.
I wonder why.
It's also because you're not that I Moody. "I had to disable my sneakoscope because it wouldn't stop whistling. It's extra sensitive. Picks up on stuff a mile around." Hmm. Or right here in your room, because once again, you're not real Mad-Eye Moody. And then he says, "Of course, it could be picking up more than kid stuff." So there's your little like, huh, I'm just going to tease and nobody's going to get it.
Right.
I'm going to have a little inside joke just with myself. Then, of course, he laughs and he says, "I'm not really in trouble until I see the whites of their eyes. That's when I open up my trunk." He let out a short, harsh laugh and pointed to the large trunk under the window. It had 7 keyholes in a row. Note the number 7. The author loves the number 7. Harry wondered what was in there until Moody's next question brought him sharply back to earth. So, Not the fun little line that we have in the movie theater, like, "You wouldn't believe me if I told you."
Yeah.
You know, none of that. But just these little, as I said, inside jokes that when you read this after you know that it's faux Moody, it's beautiful.
Yeah, these little breadcrumbs.
These little truths.
Yeah, yeah.
Listening to Frank Randall from Outlander, yeah. Use some truths in here. It's probably picking up on some other stuff.
Well, even the following conversation, again, the interactions with faux Moody are so layered that you wonder where it begins with, you know, Barty Crouch Jr. and where it ends with the actual Moody and what Barty Crouch is actually trying to impart on Harry. Is it really because he wants him to survive to get to, you know, Voldemort? Or mm-hmm. is it because he's, like, actually trying to teach him? Like, there's a whole layer here that just seems to permeate every conversation. And I like this, too. Immediately following the passage that you just read. "So, found out about the dragons, have you?" Harry hesitated. He'd been afraid of this. But he hadn't told Cedric, and he certainly wasn't going to tell Moody, that Hagrid had broken the rules. Harry trying to protect Hagrid in this situation. And then so later sweet. On, when Hagrid's like, "Hey, Harry, you did it with blah, blah, blah." And he's like, "Yeah, Cedric, I mean, yeah, Hagrid, I did. Yeah, that's great." Just so Hagrid wouldn't open
yes.
his mouth. "It's all right," said Moody, sitting down and stretching out his wooden leg with a groan. "Cheating's traditional part of the Triwizard Tournament, and always has been." "I didn't cheat," said Harry sharply. "It was a sort of accident that I had found out." "Yeah, okay, Harry, accident, sure." Moody grinned. "I wasn't accusing you, laddie. I've been telling Dumbledore from the start. He'd be as high-minded as he likes, but you can bet old Karkaroff and Maxime won't be. They'll have told their champions everything they can. They want to win. They want to beat Dumbledore. They'd like to prove he's only human." Moody gave a harsh laugh, and his magical eyes swiveled around so fast that it made Harry feel queasy to watch it. "So, got any ideas how are you going to get your past your dragon yet?" said Moody. "No," said Harry. "Well, I'm not going to tell you," said Moody, gruffly. "I don't show favoritism, me. I'm just going to give you some good general advice. And the first bit is, play to your strengths." Okay, there's a lot to break down here. First, Moody says cheating is just a natural part mm-hmm. of the Triwizarding Tournament. It is what it is. When you get into the Triwizarding Tournament, you better expect that people are going to be going to be line steppers, okay? But then he follows it up by saying, "I'm not going to tell you exactly what to do because I don't show favoritism." Mm. There's a big divide here in intent, and I would love to get your thoughts Mary about that divide, and why do you think he's making that exception? And on what level does that exception come from? Because it's faux Moody.
Why is he letting him know?
Why is he letting him know that there's the cheating is expected? Don't worry about it. Everybody cheats.
That's the Slytherin in him speaking.
But I'm not going to give you the answer because I don't want to show favoritism. Well, what the hell are we talking about? You just got done telling me that everybody's cheating. You ain't trying if you ain't cheating.
I think Moody needs to see if Harry will keep his mouth shut. Moody needs Harry to make it through these tasks because Voldemort needs Harry. Harry can't die. Think about it. If Moody didn't do this with Harry, Harry would have been burnt to a crisp in this first task. He did not know enough. He wouldn't have at all known the summoning charm. I mean, he had to practice it a whole day.
Yes.
It's advanced level magic that he would have needed to get past that dragon. I highly doubt Harry would have made it past the dragon. He probably would have just lost out on time and not gotten it. He would have been lucky just hiding behind a rock and not being burnt. And he would have lost and gotten 0 points and at least lived. But like, that's all I think Harry could have done at this point, honestly, with just a wand.
Sure.
So he needs Harry to continue live. He doesn't want Harry to spill the beans. Oh, yeah, Moody told me this because he just told Cedric. He doesn't know if Harry can keep his mouth shut. Granted, he's not outing Hagrid, but yes. He just caught him telling Cedric that there's dragons. So I think he's just being smart. Like, well, I didn't tell him anything. I told him simple charms are really good. Oh, I asked him what he's good at. Like, that is general advice that would not get him into trouble. Mm-hmm. So I think he is just being a very sly Slytherin in this sense, in my opinion. So that he needs to stay under the radar. If at all Harry says to Hagrid, oh, guess what? Moody gave me all these tips, and that somehow gets to Dumbledore.
Yeah.
You could be in deep trouble.
But then again, cheating is an expected part of the Triwizarding Tournament, right? So how much?
But not with Dumbledore. Dumbledore knew there were dragons. And probably knew, obviously, that Karkaroff and Madame Maxime were going to tell their students they were dragons. Both Cedric and Harry were about to go in there with zero knowledge.
Yeah, and this is, and this brings me to the other part that is fascinating in this exchange, which is Karkaroff and Maxime, they want to beat Dumbledore, and they want to show that he's only human. This is not necessarily just about school pride. This isn't even really about the students. This is about Maxime and Karkaroff showing the wizarding community that they're better than Dumbledore and that Dumbledore is not beyond reproach, that he's not on the level that everyone seems to have put this on. Is that a manifestation of faux Moody or is that the truth, Mary?
I think that's the truth. And a manifestation. You know, this guy thinks that he can beat Voldemort. Wait till Voldemort comes back. No, I think it's both. I think it is the truth, and I think it is his truth. Like, yeah. Look at him. I have pulled a fast one on him. I am literally not Moody, and I'm here. He's not the best wizard ever.
Right. I pulled a fast one.
Yeah. He is a human just like everybody else. That's what faux Moody is telling himself.
Yes. Okay. And that then, Mary, brings me to the conversation shared between Cedric and Harry. Again, the author is just really great at writing these things, but there are some questions that I have. Harry asks, you know, Harry tells Cedric about the dragons, and he's like, and Cedric's like, are you sure? Like, and Harry says, yeah, I'm dead sure. Trust me. I know we're not supposed to know, and don't question why I know, but I just need you to trust me that I know and you should know. And Cedric asks him, why are you telling me? Harry looked at him in disbelief. He was sure Cedric wouldn't have asked if that he had seen the dragons himself. Harry wouldn't have let his worst enemy face those monsters unprepared. Well, perhaps Snape or Malfoy. It's just fair. Isn't it? He said to Cedric. We all know now. We're on an even footing, aren't we? And Cedric, still looking at him in a slightly suspicious way, when Harry had heard a familiar clunking noise behind him, he turned around and saw Mad-Eye Moody emerging from a nearby classroom. There are two operating things happening here, Mary. One, it's, I wouldn't even let my worst enemy not know about this information.
Mm-hmm.
But then he rationalizes it by being fair, because Karkaroff and Maxime have now certainly told their students. Do you see the difference with
yeah.
me? Why do you think that there is that big difference? Like, if you're just reading it just to read it, you're thinking, yeah, well, yeah, it's fair. Like, yeah, that makes sense. But when you're reading it chapter by chapter and you're looking at it with in earnest, with every word, there are two distinct differences there. Why do you think the author makes those two so opposing forces, like, relate to each other so
why do you
condensed, so condensed? I don't know.
I think I'm having a tough time thinking about your question because I'm stuck on somebody else that I've pushed under a rug and ignored.
What?
And that's Bagman.
Okay.
So we've got this fairness. We've got this yeah. honesty and this cheating. All of the students pull their dragons out of the bag, you know, and supposedly if they were all playing by the rules, this would be the first time they're even learning that they're going up against dragons. So to Ludo Bagman, he thinks that Harry Potter has no plan, knows nothing that's going on, announces to everybody, you need to face these dragons. You need to get the gold egg. Here you go. Cedric Diggory, you're going to be going first. Harry, can I have a quick word with you? Are you feeling all right, Harry? Anything I can get you? What? No, nothing. Got a plan, said Bagman, lowering his voice conspiratorially. I can't say that word.
Conspiratorially.
Thank you. Because I don't mind sharing a few pointers if you'd like them. You know what I mean? Bagman continued, lowering his voice still further. You're the underdog here, Harry. Anything I can do to help? No, said Harry so quickly he knew he had just sounded rude. No, I know what I'm going to do. Thanks. Nobody would know, Harry, said Bagman, winking at him.
Well, first, it makes you think that Bagman's got some money on Harry.
Yes.
Just given his history.
Using the word the underdog, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a direct reference to betting. You know, he might as well be giving him the odds. You know, like, is he a 20 to 1 or is he a 200 to 1 odds? You know, might as well just be dropping lines. Bagman is a shady dude. He's a shady dude, especially when you consider the fact that the judges are the school headmasters and they're each giving their own biased opinions about how each of these tasks are handled. I mean,
I hate tasks like this. There needs to be a very clear rubric that cannot be dissuaded by personal feelings.
Well, yeah, and you get that from Karkaroff right away. I mean, he's given Harry a 4. Four out of 10, even though Harry was the one that got the egg the quickest and most efficiently. So there's a whole subtext here of, like, corruption within the wizarding community and how that affects these outcomes and what someone like Ludo Bagman has to gain from it mm-hmm. by going up to Harry being like, hey, anything you need, I got you.
Yeah.
I'll take care of you. What do
so
you think?
So shady.
So shady. And that is absolutely something I think that probably goes undervalued in this chapter. And I think the story overall.
Well, once again, we're starting to find those gray characters in the series. You know, when you start off with Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, it's like, this is a good guy, this is a bad guy, this is a good guy who's actually a bad guy, ha 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 ha, you know, and really all along we have the gray character of Snape, and now you have Ludo Bagman. You've got these people who they're not necessarily bad to the bone, but they are human.
Yes.
And they make mistakes, they make poor choices, they make selfish choices, and that sometimes impacts other people. And then we're also to see pretty stable characters like Minerva McGonagall, for example. You know, so Harry ends up obviously getting the egg. He's the quickest to get the egg. And then, you know, Professor McGonagall, she's one of the first people that Harry sees when he gets off her broom. Once again, that kind of like motherly instinct. Not only is she in charge of his house, but as I said, this is a person who's cared about him since he was a child. And before he can even go and get his scores, before he can even get his fame and glory, she wants him to go be taken care of physically. I want you to go see Madame Pomfrey. Cedric Diggory is already being mopped up. You need to go and be seen.
And then it's followed up, I think, by this reconciliation, the one that we keep mentioning, between Harry and Ron. But I think just the power trio, the three of them as a whole, all together. And it's, again, it's just written in a way that is just so perfect for the age. She writes, Harry didn't want to sit still. He was still too full of adrenaline. He got to his feet, wanting to see what he got on, what was going on outside. But before he'd reached the mouth of the tent, two people had come darting inside. Hermione followed closely by Ron. Harry, you were brilliant, Hermione said squeakily. There were fingernail marks on her face where she had just been clutching it in fear. You were amazing. You really were. But Harry was looking at Ron, who was very white, and staring at Harry as though he was a ghost. Harry, he said very seriously, whoever put your name in that goblet, I reckon they're trying to do you in. It was as though the last few weeks had never happened, as though Harry was meeting Ron for the first time right after he'd been made champion. Caught on, have you? Said Harry coldly. Took you long enough. Hermione stood nervously between them, looking from one to the other. Ron opened his mouth uncertainly. Harry knew Ron was about to apologize, and suddenly he found he didn't need to hear it. It's okay, he said, before Ron could get the words out. Forget it. No, said Ron. I shouldn't have... Forget it, Harry said. Ron grinned nervously at him, and Harry grinned back. Hermione burst into tears. There's nothing to cry about, Harry told her, bewildered. You two are so stupid, she shouted, stamping her foot on the ground, tears splashing down in her front. Then before either of them could stop her, she had given both of them a hug and dashed away, now positively howling. Barking, said Ron, shaking his head. Harry, come on, they'll be putting up your scores. Oh, my goodness gracious. The power trio is back. Ron and Harry are back together. They needn't even go through the whole relationship and the problems. And they're back to making fun of Hermione. And they're once again going unto the front together to look at his scores.
I love it. I love it. We, of course, end the chapter with a little bump in with Rita Skeeter. The kids are given their eggs, being told they have until February 24th to figure out what clue is inside this egg. Bada bing, bada boom. There you have it, friends.
And it's not just a bump into Rita Skeeter, Mary, and it is the final validation of Ron and Harry's relationship. Because if you remember, when Ron came downstairs after he was speaking, after Harry was speaking with Sirius, Ron said, yeah, you're probably just preparing for your next interview with Rita Skeeter. It's so important that this happens. It was Rita Skeeter. She was wearing acid green robes today. The quick quotes of Quill in her hand blended perfectly against them. Congratulations, Harry, she said, beaming at him. I wonder if you could give me a quick word. How you felt facing that dragon? How you feel now about the fairness of the scoring? Yeah, you can have a word, Harry said. Goodbye. And he set back off to the castle with Ron.
It's so good. It's like one of those things that, you know, you have a bad situation happen and on your way home, you're like, oh, I wish I just said goodbye.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is the story rhyming that I'm talking about. When one of the major things that Ron had an issue with, that Harry finally validates him. And Harry and Ron can walk together back to the castle.
Beautiful.
Oh, you know what, Mary? I have to do it. I have to play it. If I could just find it. Nope, not that one. It's... Oh, God, that's why I love this chapter so much. All right. You ready for a different perspective?
Oh, we'll see. My energy level is so low. Let's see.
All right.
I'm going to try. Let me have a sip of my licorice tea.
licorice tea. Wanted to remind you that this different perspective, I'll give you some time. Ready? I'll buy you some time. This different perspective is brought to you by the Mary and Blake store. Go check out the Harry Potter Potterverse collection just in time for the holidays. So if you have a Mary and Blake lover or Harry Potter lover in your life, go to the Mary and Blake store, check out the Potter collection, as well as all the other collections we have at that store as well. You won't be disappointed. All right, Marvin, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
Holy cricket, you're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are?
Hermione Granger.
Hermione!
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man, Hermione, you got a lot going on.
I am so underappreciated. I helped Harry learn how to do the summoning charm.
Yes.
I helped these boys finally get back together.
Yes.
And then they make fun of me. Oh,
you know, that's a natural state of being for you, though.
I think I need a new boyfriend. I need someone who will respect me, who doesn't make fun of the fact that I love to spend time in the library. It actually came in use.
You know who I'm thinking for you, Hermione.
He's got a fan club. I can't.
He likes the library.
Can't even.
He's a really famous seeker.
He actually did do a great... He did do a great job.
He's
with
pretty
his
smart,
dragon.
Huh?
I'll give him that.
He's a little cute.
But
just admit, he's a little cute.
Because I got to be real with you. The current boys that I'm with, They're annoying.
Oh,
they
my goodness.
They do not appreciate
right?
me. I love them as brothers.
Yes.
I thought I loved one of them a little bit differently, but I don't right now.
I'm
underappreciated.
Sometimes you get a little butterflies, but you know what? That underappreciation.
I just want someone to tell me I'm pretty. I just want someone to tell me I'm smart.
You
want to
feel special.
Nobody's even noticed my teeth. You don't even know what I'm talking about. You don't even, Blake Larson, know what I'm talking about? Exactly.
What are you talking
You haven't
about?
Even... Exactly. You'll find out. You'll find out soon, Blake Larson. None of y'all found out about my teeth.
You know what, Hermione? You're not appreciated enough. No one cares about the teeth. No one cares about the hair. You gotta... You know what?
My teeth have looked different for like a month.
Maybe you're using some hot tools. I don't know.
Oh, for heat styling?
You know, you're trying to get rid of the frizz, maybe some VO5 treatment.
I don't know if people do that, but this took place in the 90s.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay. Yeah,
you, all the hot oil.
I'm just saying, I'm going to go treat myself to a mani-pedi and get a butter beer.
All the butter beer.
Because you know what? You got to be your own best cheerleader. I was Harry's best cheerleader now.
Sure, yep.
I was Ron's best cheerleader for the bromance, and now I need to go treat myself.
And you know what you do on the way? Maybe you stop at the library, see if...
I would love to stop at the library.
See if your boy's there.
Okay, stop picking on me.
All right, well, listen, ladies and gents, that is the end, of course, of the different perspective. Mary and I do have a little bit of a hard out, so we will get to your emails and questions next episode. We just got a lot of stuff going on.
I'm a hot mess express.
Yes, and I can tell... The beauty of being married to a person for 11 years is that you can tell when things are not 100% just by a look in their eye. And I'm telling you right now, Mary is muscling through this podcast right now because she's in a lot of pain. So I'm going to put an end to this one for today. And hopefully by the next episode that we do, Mary will be in better shape and we'll get all to your emails and questions and all the listener feedback that we have. So that is that. You ready to close this bad boy out?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Thank you so incredibly much to our friends at jointhenerdclan.com. You make this and all of our podcasts honestly possible. We do have a goal by the end of 2021 to hit 1,000 members at jointhenerdclan.com. So if you're listening right now and you're not yet a member, for as little as $2 a month, you can support this mom and pop podcast. This is our bread and butter. It helps us support our family. And it's something that we're very passionate about. We want to be able to put out free podcast content because we know not everybody can support us, but we want to make sure that everyone still has Lumos in the time of Knox. But if you do find that we are that for you, if we keep you company on your drives and you do have a little bit to spare, jointhenerdclan.com is somewhere you should check out.
And then also too, a lot of people have been asking me Blake, if I can't do the Nerd Clan on a monthly basis, but I do want to give you a singular donation because they know that we need a new computer and everything, you can actually go to maryandblake.com/support and you'll see a space where you can just do a one-time donation to Mary and myself to help us get a brand new computer.
Yay, thank you all so much. On that note, my name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake.
Mischief managed.
Membership fees apply after free trial. Cancel any time.
Okay, so why do people love my Total Body Bar workouts? Because they work. My clients get an amazing workout and great results. I'm Andrea Rogers, professional dancer and trainer, and my Extend Bar classes are fun, only 30 minutes, and proven to help you get sculpted, lean, and strong. And right now, you can stream my Extend Bar classes for free on the Beachbody On Demand app. See how effective these workouts truly are. Start for free today at beachbody.com.